Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. All right. Sterling Bennett and Dan DeVoe. New Year's Eve here in San Francisco. New Year's Eve for my man out in Hesperia. We're talking about the San Francisco 49ers. Before we get into Mr. Moody, which is, I feel bad for the guy. And I know like a majority of the people are going to want to see another kicker. But he's a kicker, for crying out loud. Like, I mean, there's more important issues than kickers. I get it. He hasn't been good. But
maybe.
Yeah.
He's been that bad.
He's been brutal. Well, any of that, the high ankle sprain, do we give him a pass a little bit?
I don't care. Right. He's bad last year, too.
All right, we want to continue the conversation, however, about Brock Purdy. I threw out Sam Darnold. I'm a big Sam Darnold guy. What say you? Let's start things with Robert out in Concord. Wants to talk about the Niners quarterback. Robert, what's up, buddy?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Look, for me personally, I've decided that, well, in my opinion, I'd love to see Brock Purdy get signed by the 49ers. Hopefully not to a lucrative deal that puts the team on ice skates trying to figure out what players to keep, especially since I really don't think it really matters at this point. But the talk about Sam Darnold, again, in my opinion, or Brock Purdy, or even Lamar Jackson, just joking. On this football team right now with the 49ers offensive line, I don't care who you put right back there at quarterback. There's just not much of talent around the quarterback for success. I will always go back to 1999, to Kurt Warner. And look, that man had weapons from Torrey Holt to Isaac Bruce, to Marshall Faulk, to an unbelievable offensive line that gave that man time to throw for over 400 yards, it seemed like, each and every game. They were scoring over 20-plus points. So you put a quarterback back there with an offensive line, I think, you know, we'll see the success that Brock Purdy has had in the past. So that's who I'd love to see back next season, just hopefully not to the point where $60-plus million will eat away at the other chances of signing three players that could be to the success of the 49ers. The one last thing is with Jake Moody. Hopefully this guy does not have yips like Mark Woolley from the Atlanta Braves, where he lost it. So hopefully he can recover if it's an injury and get back to what we remember seeing.
Third round draft pick, which is sort of a head scratch. And thanks for the call. Well, that's just it. That's the hang up. And one of the reasons why I'm entertaining Sam Darnold is because Purdy's not coming in at a team-friendly deal, nor should he, quite frankly. You get one opportunity, really, at this. Maybe two if he sustains his level of play, and we'll see. But you know his agents are going to want to reset the market. That's what they do. That's what they're paid to do. He's next in line. For crying out loud, Dak Prescott just reset the market at $65 million per. And when you think about Tua Tagovailoa, to that of Trevor Lawrence, that you know they're going to ask for potentially north of $60 million. And yes, I don't care how you slice it up, and forget about the APY, the average per year. You have to think about guaranteed money. So they're gonna want somewhere between, what, 175? They're going to come in with a high number. And that is going to compromise or limit what it is that you can do as the 49ers, in terms of addressing that offensive line, in terms of signing Dre Greenlaw, in terms of Talanoa Hufanga's contract, yes, you're not going to be as good of a football team because you're going to focus the majority of your money is going to be invested in one guy, and that is Brock Purdy. Wherein lies the Sam Darnold component in all of this? Now, you gave the scenario if they both committed $40 million. There's no way in hell Brock Purdy wants $40 million. His right. guys are going to look for as much as they can get. And Sam Darnold is not. Darnold doesn't have that sort of leverage. He's got 1 year under his belt. So he's going to come in somewhere around $35 million. Maybe 40. I don't know the asking price, but I can tell you this. It's going to be considerably lower than that of Brock Purdy. And to me, again, not that all things go back to Sam Darnold, but it's a no-brainer. Would you agree that they are going to ask for everything in the kitchen sink?
I do, but I also think it's not just about guarantees and APY. I also believe it's about how you structure contracts.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter how or who the player is, whether it is George Kittle, Fred Warner, D'Amador Lenore. Those cap hits remain, albeit in Brock's case, it'll be higher than what it is now, $1 million. They're going to remain relatively low for the first 2 to 3 years of that contract. So the worry of, oh, if they pay Brock, they're not going to be able to re-sign certain players or bring in key free agents next year or even in 2 years' time, that's not true. Like, they are going to be able to be competitive in the open market for the next 2, if not 3 years, even if they re-sign Brock Purdy to a massive contract. That said, at the end of that contract, what makes it so tough is it's hard to get out of, and it's the void years that crush you. You know, this team, for a long time, was paying, you know, $3, $4, $5, $8 million to Dee Ford when he wasn't even playing for sure. them. So this idea that, well, if they pay Brock, they're not going to be competitive, or they're not going to be able to sign players, and it's just going to be Brock Purdy and nobody else on the team, it's not true. Now, yes, you have to eventually replace players like Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle, but I would really not be too worried about when you hear, oh, Brock Purdy agrees to a 4-year, I don't know, whatever it'll be, you know, $65 million a year contract. That number means nothing. It is a face value number that has nothing, no weight behind it. It's all about how the contract is structured, and the Niners are arguably better than anybody else when it comes to freeing up that money, maybe outside of Kansas City, and keeping those contracts low, even after paying a quarterback $65-plus million a year.
Yeah, that's well put. And they'll kick that can down the road. Yeah. But eventually you do have to pay the piper. And some of that, sure. like, they'll defer a lot of that. And you're right.
Yeah.
Prognorate and company are good at that. But it is still going to have to be paid at whether you pay me now or you pay me later.
Correct.
And the one thing when people say, okay, well, you know, he's better than Trevor Lawrence. Or how come Trevor Lawrence is able to get that sort of money in Tua Tagovailoa and even Dak Prescott? The 49ers, keep in mind, every single year, because they are so star-laden, are resetting the market when it comes to Nick Bosa, when it comes to Fred Warner, when it comes to these Christian McCaffrey, the highest paid running back, I want to say, like the 40 and Trent Williams. The 49ers deal with this every single year. Those other teams that I just mentioned, Jacksonville and Miami, they're paying one guy a healthy number, and that's their starting quarterback. For the 49ers, you have to keep in mind, if it was just Brock Purdy and then a bunch of guys under rookie deals or a bunch of guys that were okay or some guys with some promise, it's a different story. But you're shelling out some serious money to a lot of proven all-Pro Bowl performers. And so it does become a question, I think, of dollars and cents because of the money that's already been given out by the 49ers. And they certainly, as you mentioned, do it better than ever. But at some point, I do believe it comes back to bite you. And it just becomes a question as to whether or not he's worthy of that money. And if I can do the same with that of Sam Darnold, but at a lower number, it's going to make a lot more sense, I think, for the San Francisco 49ers going forward. Let's get out to Nick hanging out in Berkeley. He wants to talk about the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. What's up, Nick? Nick, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. The Niners played Masters League last night, man. And you know what? We went on a drive where everybody touched the ball one time and we scored a touchdown. Then we're going down to take a 2-score lead. And this invisible offensive pass interference, bro, like, I can't even believe it. Like, it was just a ridiculous call, right? So anyways, that being said, dude, Shanahan's got major problems in his decision-making. Mason was what, like maybe second, third in the league, running like 6 yards a pop, And then all of a sudden McCaffrey comes back and he's out of the lineup, basically like just out of commission. It's like, bro, you can't mix him in. Like, he didn't sit on the bench for 2 or 3 years to earn a spot to get a shot. Like, why couldn't you, or, you know, ease McCaffrey back in rather than just grind him, throw him in the meat grinder again? Now he got re-hurt. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's just so unbelievably short-sighted of him to not see that, mix people in and respect the players that's been on the bench and earn their time to get in there, man. It's like, how do the other players feel about that? I'd be pissed off, man, quite honestly.
Well, to me, as it relates to last night, we talked about this, is when you're talking about running the football, why he just got away from the run entirely.
Yeah.
And that's, you're right, that's where he hangs his hat, right? It comes down from his old man, whether it's Bobby Turner, but that's what they do. And it's, once you get a team on their skates and they're playing run and you're sucking them up on play action, well, then the world's yours. When you have Kittle and you got Pearsall and you got Debo Samuel and you got Purdy pulling the trigger, and that's what they did in that first half. That was vintage 49er football. That looked like the Kyle Shanahan that we've all known to grow and love, man. Just throwing to wide open guys. Brock Purdy just had Pearsall by himself. Now, I know you're giving Purdy a lot more credit for the numbers than I am, but Purdy had a good game. I just think a lot of that was just Kyle Shanahan, and they had the ability to run, and Detroit's defense sucks to begin with. And that compounded with the fact that they had play action working. It was a carnival. And then inexplicably, Sterling, he gets away from him in the second half. And we're still trying to figure out why.
But this idea that they were able to run the football, and I think I would agree to the extent of they were getting Pearsall involved on end-arounds and reverses, and Debo was involved, and Grendo was involved. But if I asked you how many yards do you think Grendo had last night, the lead back, how many do you think he had?
Less than 50.
He had 34 on 9 carries. So this idea that they were running the football, well, maybe a little bit in the first 2 drives, I would agree. But outside of that, they really were not running the football. Now, I would also agree that you got to continue to try. You can't just get away from it, which that was a problem last night and many other games in the past. But I also think that if we're going to give Shanahan all this credit for, you know, running the football, looking like himself in that first, you know, first half, maybe 3 quarters or so, and maybe not shade Brock Purdy, but not give him the credit or all of the credit or a lot of the credit I think he deserves, I think we also have to believe that this offensive line is not built the way it is currently constructed. Their third or fourth string left tackle, their third string left guard, to be able to play this Kyle Shanahan run the football 35 times, milk that clock and get out kind of game. And in that same breath, if you can't do that, how are you helping your quarterback? Can't block for him. You can't do play action because your offensive line can't use it. And you're also on your fifth string or fourth string running back who isn't built to last or really built to be that kind of running back just yet. He's never had over 120 carries in college. I mean, this idea that they have the pieces in place to do Shanahan's offense really isn't true.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Yeah, you're true. What you say is absolutely, it's gospel. There's no doubt. That offensive line, actually, I thought it held up pretty well last night, considering.
Surprisingly, it was better than I thought it was going to be, yeah.
And the running attack was not what we've seen when Kyle Shanahan has it going. You know, whether it's Christian McCaffrey or Jordan Mason this year, we know what it looks like when they're getting to the second level, no problem. And a lot of that is by design, and a lot of that is just, you know, they get into that rhythm. No, that wasn't there last night. But there was a commitment to the run in the first half. All that being said, that yes, that running attack was not vintage Kyle Shanahan, but there was a commitment to it. And I know what it is that I saw because it was Troy Aikman that underlined it on the telecast, and he showed the linebackers on more than one occasion biting on that run.
Yeah.
And sucking up and allowing George Kittle to get behind the linebackers, allowing Pearsall to run free. There was a balance there. And again, I know it wasn't vintage Shanahan. And no, it wasn't, you know, Grendo wasn't wowing anybody. But I think he was doing just enough. And the question becomes, why wasn't that just enough good enough to actually call for the football in the second half? Like, why abandon it altogether? I mean, it clearly there clearly was a balance, and it was clearly working in terms of the play action. And in order to establish play action, you got to run the football more than once. But as we pointed out, they threw it 16 to 17 times. I don't know. I hear what it is that you're saying. The offense is banged up. It's not a time for you to sort of get back to Kyle Shanahan football and just run 3 yards into a cloud of dust and be Jim Harbaugh. I get that. But throw it 16 out of 17 times? Was that called for? I mean, don't you think that there were better options in the second half for Kyle Shanahan and company?
I do, and maybe that lends credence to your point about Darnold and Brock Purdy. You know, we've talked a lot this year on overtime with Kyle Madsen and myself and Mark Grandy about, you know, okay, when everything else is going wrong, when your offensive line's not playing great, which is hard in itself to be a quarterback and make your throws and be precise, but also when you're not running the football, when your kicker's missing field goals and PATs, a great quarterback lifts all boats. He pulls you out of the mud. Joe Burrow with the Bengals this year. That defense is terrible. They're fighting for a playoff spot. Sam Darnold this year, to your example, like the Vikings haven't always had a great running game this year, but Darnold is the offense. He is the quarterback lifting that ship or steering that ship in the right direction. Wes Purdy this year, last night especially, two just plain bad interceptions against the Dolphins, a bad interception against the Cardinals earlier this year, a bad interception. Games that, not to say you win last night, but you beat the Dolphins, beat the Cardinals. You know, you're still vying for a playoff spot, at least to some degree, this late in the season. And again, maybe that does lean, you know, to your argument of like, well, maybe Sam Darnold does do things that Brock can't do. Brock can be a great quarterback and all, but maybe last night when things don't go well and Shanahan says, I don't want to run the football, I'm going to pass the football, maybe Purdy isn't the quarterback you lean on to do those things. Maybe it is a quarterback like Sam Darnold to drop back 16 times in the second half alone.
And now he's injured once again as he's going to close out the season not playing against the Arizona Cardinals. Let's go back to last night and hear what Purdy had to say about his injury.
I mean, it doesn't feel the best, but just leave it at that. So we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, more. I just want to get more detailed about Brock Purdy and talking about what happened.
On that sack, I got hit on the backside, and basically just my arm was on fire kind of thing. And so I tried throwing a couple on the sideline, and I couldn't at that point. So, it has nothing to do with tapping out of a game or anything like that. I love my teammates, and I'll go to the very end for them and this fan base and everybody. So, That's what hurts me is like I couldn't finish the game. But again, we'll see tomorrow.
This is a worst case scenario for him because I think he wanted to use these last couple of games to make the case and shut guys like me up in the Sam Darnold nonsense to solidify the case that and leave everybody with a good taste in their mouth. Are you a Seinfeld guy? Big Chick, are you a Seinfeld guy?
I've seen it.
Okay, all right. Nobody watches Seinfeld around here.
No soup for you, Dan.
Well, there's no suit for you, but there was an episode where Jerry Seinfeld, as well as George Costanza, want to leave on a high note. You always leave on a high note. Leave them wanting more. Like if you tell a funny joke, get the hell out of the room. All right? See you later. Come on, I'll be back. That's all for me. And so when it... Thank you very much.
Nice.
That's about the extent of the knowledge around here when it comes to Seinfeld.
It's a festivus for the rest of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The pole of grievance. But when it comes to Brock Purdy, I think these last two games were an opportunity just once again. And his agents know as much. Like, let's go out there and let's get your money. Let's prove to everybody and leave on a high note, all right? Because everything right now are just about getting leverage when you sit down in that conference room and you go head-to-head with the 49ers, all right?
Yeah.
Let's just prove to everybody that you're worthy of that deal. And so getting hurt and not being able to play, throwing the two picks. Who has the leverage? My man Sterling Bennett, who has the leverage when we sit down? Is it the 49ers? Is it Brock Purdy? And, you know, his body of work over the last couple of years? When we sit down, who has the hammer?
Simply based on the fact that Brock is still under contract next year, like he's not a free agent. He has one more year on his contract. I would like to believe the Niners have some leverage here. You know, let's not forget that the way he's gone out, forget the injury, for example. Like, the last 2 weeks, it's been, wow, Brock looks really good. Wow, Brock looks like a franchise quarterback. This is the guy you pay $65 million to. But then the last 2 weeks, it's ended on the worst possible way. Interception here. Game-losing interception against Miami last week. And it's like, he hasn't really been able to string together four complete quarters, maybe outside of the Bears game a few weeks back. But even then, the Bears aren't very good. It's like, so I would say San Francisco has to have the majority of the leverage simply based on you're under contract for us this year or next year, whether you like it or not.
Is holding out a year or deciding not to pay him, is that an option?
I mean, it's, I don't know if it's viable, but sure, you cannot pay Brock Purdy and maybe he gets frustrated and sits out and is like, really? But
He'll never do that.
No, he won't, but let's just play this thing out. Sure. Let's say he does that. Let's say San Francisco wants to play hardball. They're not going to pay him. They want him to prove himself once again next year, and they'll say, look, you know, we'll play the Kirk Cousins franchise tag game if we get down to that road. But let's say they want to play hardball. Okay, well, this year alone, they played hardball with Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
And both parties did that thing, and it took to the 10 days before week one against the Jets. Nick Bosa played hardball. He had all the leverage. Took until the Thursday before week number one against the Steelers. Are you willing to play that level of hardball with your franchise quarterback? And what message does that send to him and the team? Like, do you actually want me to be here? Like, what's going on? And if you do that, you better have a backup option. You're bringing back Joshua Dobbs. You're bringing back Brandon Allen. You're signing Kirk Cousins. Like, you have to have a fallback if that's the case. And in San Francisco, like, they don't have to pay Brock. I think they should. But to your question, Dan, like, I don't think it's on the table, but it's certainly like in a case of emergency option for them.
I mean, could you do something like this? Where, so this thing doesn't fester like Brandon Ayuk. Because I think there was a lot of carryover, and you just had a sense going back to the contract negotiations that this was the 49ers.
Well, he's posting after the Super Bowl, like, "Oh, you know, better, you know, be grateful for what you had here."
You don't want to repeat that.
No.
So, is there a scenario there where you can tell Brock Purdy, "Look, we are not going to talk about a contract until week 8 or week 9," because they did sign D'Amador Lenore. They're not adverse to doing it midseason. We just need to see more. And we'll open up these contract talks in week 10 or week, whatever the week is. We feel as though we've seen enough. But we are going to go silent. And we ask you to do the same. Like, we're not going to talk contract. There's not going to be any back and forth. There's not an offer we're going to put on the table for you to reject. This isn't going to be about you getting on social media saying the last offer was trash and the verbal darts being exchanged by both parties. We will just do this towards the latter part of the season, and if it makes sense, we will sign your guy. But we're not doing anything until then. There's a memorandum. Option or no?
You risk that becoming a massive distraction next year, and for this team, the way they're built, how old the roster is, you can't afford to have a whole year with Brock Purdy kind of playing each week by like, oh, now I'm making 40. Now I'm making 50. Oh, now I'm back to 40. Like, you really can't.
I love it. Incentivize these guys, man.
I mean, that's the reason why you put incentives in the contract they sign. Maybe you tell Brock, hey, we'll give you $40 million per year, guaranteed essentially, but we'll give you incentives to reach the $65 million plateau that you want.
Yeah.
I think that's a much more likely scenario than, hey, let's shelve the conversations, have the entire offseason for the media to talk about it, for their family who just got married last year to talk about this of, hey, Brock, you know, how much you're going to make, you know, in 1 to 2 years time, and have that linger. Like, I don't think you want that. This team has been through, like last year, too many off the field distractions, Trent Williams, Brandon Ayuk, to have that happen with the quarterback position again. After it happened with Jimmy Garoppolo and after with Trey Lance, like, the one thing you don't want is exactly what you're putting on the table right now.
You know, I would agree with you, But it seems like everybody's so dismissive. Like, no, that's not really an option. No, well, it's a formality. But think about it. Do you think if Miami could have waited another year, do you really think they would sign Tua to that sort of contract? Do you think Jacksonville would have signed Trevor Lawrence if they could have waited a year? The 49ers, if they know what they know now and Brandon Ayuk was not under contract, do you think he's signing that deal this offseason? I don't think so. So sometimes waiting... Well, I'm just saying that sometimes waiting isn't necessarily the worst thing. And it doesn't seem as though it's even on the table more often than not. All right, we got to get to a break. The segment was sponsored by Chilton Auto Body. When we continue, I do want to do a little Jake Moody.
Oh.
No pun intended, but let's kick around some Moody. We'll be back. Sterling Bennett, Dan Devone, right after this.